Carpet was wet cement. I wanted to stop and go back. Even my stomach tightened and told me to turn around, but I pressed on. I passed the copier and the coffee pot, readied my keys. If you focus on the lock, I told myself, you won't see the plume and bulge of phone messages, memos, and mail clipped to and stuffed in the pocket on your door. I made it past the door. I managed to block out the messages, mail, and other menaces that lay in wait. I knew that once touched and acknowledged, each one had the power to bite or sting or stab. But the door was closed now. I don't think anyone saw me come in, I thought. Maybe I'll have a few minutes alone to focus, to think, to plan. Anybody been there? I was wrong, of course. The door rattled and banged, and someone called out. I held my breath in my tongue. Maybe he'll go away, I hoped. But I heard keys clank and the deadbolt snap. Then Burl blew in like a dust devil. A fistful of phone messages and an armpit packed with mail. He put the keys away and started to sort. I thought I heard you come in, he said without looking up. Trying to sneak past me, huh? No, I just needed a few minutes alone, I answered. I wanted to pray. I hoped that a religious answer might inflict a little guilt, cause him to leave. Burl looked at me, scanned the room, and then added, if you ask me, I don't know how you can even think in this office. You got so many stacks, it looks like the New York skyline. I'm afraid to even give you this mail. I know you'll just abandon it to some pile or box. I hope you don't have any pets at home. I think Burl wanted me to appreciate his humor, but I wanted to appreciate his absence. I stood and hoped that he'd get the hint. He didn't. He stared into the far corner of my office. I'm going to tell Tom Sawyer I think I know where he can find Injun Joe. Burl chuckled at his own humor and tugged on my shirt as I passed by. You know, remember Injun Joe and the... I left him in my office and headed to the restroom. Nature wasn't calling. I just needed to be alone. But Donna, the deaconess, was in the foyer and on her way in. Just a man I wanted to see, she bubbled. I was deaf and mute and walked like a man in Manhattan, eyes straight ahead and pace full of purpose. I hate to bother you, Pastor, but... She almost followed me into the men's room. She stopped short and called to me with the door open to crack. But the Spanish church left the door unlocked, and they used my stuff in the kitchen again. Didn't anyone teach her a shred of common courtesy? I fumed to myself. Why can't they leave me alone? I knew she wouldn't leave without an answer, so I barked from the stall where I hid. Donna, go to the kitchen. I'll be there in a minute. Then you can show me what's wrong. I heard the door close. Finally, alone, I sighed. But the silence wasn't real. No peace to go with it. Besides, I could hear Donna and Burl arguing through the walls. He'd already been searching for me and ran into her. He'd soon find my hideout. I had to leave. I slithered to my car and drove away. If this place has a demon, I thought, I know his name is Distraction. My car was my sanctuary. It gave me sanity and security. It was my real office. Once inside my favorite city park, I could work. I had everything I needed, a patch of shade, a telephone, a restroom, a quiet path for praying. This day I needed the path. Lord, what's wrong with me? I prayed. Are all pastors this scattered and overwhelmed? I know better. I wish it were a demon. Then I could cast it out and get on with life. But the demon follows me. It is me. It's my kaleidoscope brain, my roller coaster moods, my hypersensitivity, my diabolical distractions. God, I've only been at this church 18 months, and I'm ready to escape. I'm such a lightweight and loser. I'm glad that the book of Psalms includes prayers of complaint. That was the only prayer in my heart, the only kind I could relate to, and I knew God would not reject me for my honesty. When Israel was in bondage in Egypt, all they could do was groan. Still, God heard the groan and had compassion. I crawled back into my car. As always, I was met by the trash and debris, boxes and briefcases, pads of paper and post-it note reminders. But this time I saw every scrap and crumb as a fitting metaphor for my life. This wasn't just my car or office. This mess was my life. God, if you care, please help me, I pleaded. I don't often hear God speak so clearly, but I did that day. He said, open your mail. But Lord, I left it in the office. Not today's mail, came the reply. I turned and reached in the box full of my good intentions and unopened mail. I fished out a colorful priority mail pouch and ripped it open. A book fell out. Another book for the stack beside my bed, I thought. Just what I need. Another reason to feel stupid. I can write books, I just can't read them. I read the note. It was on a large post-it stuck on the cover. It was from my least favorite publisher. She wrote, "I want to make amends, Jerry. I know we haven't been on good terms. I made it hard for you. The enclosed book helped me understand myself. My life makes sense now. The puzzle fits. For the first time. I have attention deficit disorder, ADD. I always have. If you read the book, maybe you can understand me better. I've learned to give myself a little grace. Perhaps you will too." I peeled off the sticky note and read the title concealed beneath, Driven to Distraction, by Ned Hollowell, M.D. Had the title used any word other than distraction, I would not have read the book. But I knew this was a God thing. I dove in head first. Dr. Hollowell told my story in the pages of his book. The disorganization, procrastination, lack of motivation. It was all me. I was the guy at times driven by perfectionism and high performance. But I was also at other times the unmotivated slob who couldn't get out of bed. I had lots of projects on the burner, but few ever made it off the stove. I had so many ideas and creative schemes that my brain would smoke. It was painful to know that I couldn't, that I wouldn't see them through to reality. I could announce a new preaching series one week and be bored with it by the next. The last-minute rush for sermons, board agendas, and Bible studies was my curse. The low self-esteem, the mood swings, the anxiety and depression, I had it all. He was talking to me. My life began to change that day. I soon had the opportunity to research ADD and help a publisher develop and write two books on the subject. Because of my spirituality and faith, I can't accept the pathological and negative way most doctors, researchers, and psychologists view and present ADD. It's true that we happen to be the 5% of the population who seem to be genetically predisposed to alcoholism and addictive behavior, but we also happen to be very gifted, creative, sensitive, and intelligent. I've come to believe that most of the trouble that adults and children with ADD experience comes from the fact that we're round pegs in square holes. We don't fit well with the 95% of the population who don't have or relate to ADD. When we try to pass for normal or force ourselves into the square holes, we experience more than our share of stress and pain and low self-esteem. I found that there are three positive things I can do. Redefine myself as I truly am. Restructure my environment to honor and acknowledge my unique difference in needs. And three, renegotiate my relationships to find support and not shame. I've learned that spirituality is best defined as making friends with the truth. And the first truth is that God made me. He didn't make me disabled or disordered, just different. The sooner I discover that difference with its gifts and challenges, the sooner I can make the changes in my attitude and my behavior. Distraction, when the pastor has ADD. I want to read one other story to you. This is from Meditations for the 12-Step. A lot of times when I'm working with people who don't want to work a 12-Step program or it's too hard for them, I say, read this. It's got little 12 or so little stories for each step of the scripture, and it's a gentle way to introduce somebody to the 12 steps. This happens to be one for step 2. Step 2 came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. The scripture is John 3:16-17. For God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have eternal life. For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him. John 3:16 is a wonderful verse. It declares God's grace and love, but I can't help but feel that some believers fail to read the next verse. For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn. I'm thinking of a young man who had a very troubled childhood. It's easy to notice him in his mother's strict church, that is, if he goes. He gets up several times during the service, squirms when he's seated, and bolts out the door during the final prayer. And as a preacher screams out condemnation against pornography and drunkenness and lust and sin, the young man fumes because he knows that he is guilty as charged. And just below his anger lies his shame, and just below his shame lies his despair. Later, as he waits alone in the parking lot, he is anything but uplifted. He hates these people and their God. Do you know who needs a doctor? The sick. Do you know who needs a redeemer? The lost and hurting. Do you know who Christ came for? This young man and others like him. Like me. Like you. God so loved the world that he sent help, not condemnation. When I'm being judged, I squirm too. But when I'm being loved, I change. God of love and grace, please change me. One of the big problems with ADD is that for the most of our lives, those of us that are ADD, we've been given a moral diagnosis long before we ever had any medical diagnosis. You know, you're just lazy. You're just stupid. You're crazy. You're using that as an excuse. You don't want to. You don't try hard enough. You don't whatever. And the fact is that in reality, when we experience the symptoms of ADD, at that point, it's a medical problem, not a moral problem. It's chemistry, not character. Now, there's another part to that, but it doesn't begin that way. Anyway, I want to get started in this in earnest, but I want to tell you why I'm doing this. You heard my story, maybe, is distraction, when the pastor has ADD. But the fact is, I got this great opportunity, because I'm a writer. You know, I've written for all sorts of people, undoubtedly. You've probably all read books that I've written, but you just didn't know it was me, because I'm just a nobody kind of writer, you know. I get a little writer's fee, and that's it. But I've written probably 35 or more books, and it's just, that's what I do, and part of ministry, to survive financially. And anyway, a publisher called and asked me to write these two books for ADD, and they sent me all over America. I went to Pittsburgh and Dallas and Detroit and San Francisco and San Diego to all these conferences, and I got to learn all this stuff about ADD. But early on, I realized that I had it, my son had it. The very week I got that letter from that publisher about ADD, my son, we'd gotten a call from the teacher. She said, in the middle of my lecture, you know, it was fifth grade, whatever, she said, your son stood up and said, everybody noticed my new haircut? You know? So I knew we were talking about the same thing. So I had this great opportunity to go all over the country and learn about ADD. The thing was, after I'd been with the best, the very best, you know, and these people, and got to know these researchers on first name basis, and then I would say to them, did you hear what Dr. Cummings is doing up in Duarte at City of Hope? Do you know what Ken Blum's doing down in Texas? Hear what they're doing at Cook County and in Australia, and the one on compulsive eating, and the one where and they go, no, you know, we just got our little thing here, and that's it, thank you. And I realized they were so worried about protecting their grants if they said something good about somebody else. And all these experts were like the blind men and the elephant, you know. One's got the ear, this is a leafy creature, you know. And the guy says, no, he's got the tail. It's like a vine. And the other one's got the trunk. He says, no, it's like a hose. And he's got the belly, goes, it's a wall, you know. Another's got the legs, says, it's a tree. I'm a nobody, and I'm standing back and I'm going, duh, you know, and they don't get it. But when it comes to this stuff, you know, I've been counseling for years and pastoring and writing, but I relate to Charlie Brown, you know, really, peanuts, you know. If this was a formal occasion or some might where I'd have to wear a tie, I always wear my Charlie Brown tie, you know, or Mickey Mouse. There's a particular cartoon that I really relate to from The Gospel According to Peanuts, you know, where Charlie Brown, Linus, and Lucy, they're going to go to the grassy knoll area, you know, and they're all laying back on the grass looking up at the clouds. And Charlie Brown says, let's tell each other what we see in the clouds, all right? And so immediately Linus pops up and says, look, there's the outline of Thomas Eakin, the famous intellectual and poet. And Lucy says, no, there's the outline of British Honduras. You can see it, can't you? When the Linus comes back in and says, no, look. There's Constantine in the 3rd century as he's about to cross the bridge at Milan and conquer the Roman Empire under the sign of the cross. And then there's silence. And they said, well, Charlie Brown, what do you see? And still silence. They said, well, this was your idea. What do you see? And finally it says, well, I was going to say I saw a ducky and a horsey.
When they're all seeing that other stuff, I see duckies and horses. You know,
and that's where we live, most of us. So when it comes to ADD, that's the approach I take, especially because of my recovery experience. Keep it simple, you know, KISS. Is there somebody who's a good reader who would volunteer to read the common symptoms of ADD for me? That can read fast, too? Yeah, come on up, would you please? Now, as he's coming up, I'm going to tell you, we ADDers, among all the things that we are, one of the things we're not is linear. You know, this is linear. You know, A, B, C, D, E. I mean, we're bored by this time. We're going A, Z, T, P, you know, all over. But that linearness gives us creativity, you know. But that randomness gives us creativity. But on the other hand, being nonlinear like that, we struggle. They think that we're stupid and we don't make it with the first two intelligences, which are logical, math, verbal, linguistic. I loved algebra. It was the only thing. I didn't do any homework in high school, but I got A's and B's in algebra, and I'm a writer. But in the linear task, you know, think about the test they give you in math. Billy lives 6.2 kilometers from Sally. He's carrying a weight of 6.9 kilograms at a speed of so-and-so. You know, when do they meet? How do they meet? How much they got between them? You know, and I'm going, who cares about that, you know? By that point, I want to hurt somebody when I'm taking a test, you know? Or think about the thing with writing, how linear reading is. You know, you know, I'm a writer who's learned that I got to write for people like me, which means I'm going to make the material and the story complex, not the language, because we're intelligent people. We need the challenge. But if you read somebody who's not doing it well, and I have a story that's going to be published in Guidepost in December issue, and I sent them, they had to bridge it, and they sent it back to me, and it was full of this verbal language, adverbs. First editor I had took my license to use adverbs away, and it was the best thing that anybody had ever done for me, you know. So never forget, she was from Harper and Row, Jan Johnson, famous editor. I don't know how I ever got her to start with. Never talked to an editor in my life, as a matter of fact. And so she paged me, and I answered the payphone, and I called her. And the first thing she said, Miss Jan Johnson, you know, and she said, who gave you a license to use adverbs? And I said, nobody. Just then why are you using them? And from that moment on, I knew I couldn't do that anymore. And so when you begin to get into the language, like I read this stuff like an introductory verbal clause or something, having understood that all the kids would not play with him, you know, and then you got to go search for the subject and verb, and then, God forbid, there's a conjunction and a subordinate clause, and in the midst of that, I went to Alaska. Glaciers and king crabs, halibut, you know, and all of a sudden, then I get to the end of the page, and I go, oh, God, what did I just read? Well, let me see. And I start back up at the beginning and read it all over again. And the fact is, we're good readers. We just get a little pushed off track now and then. You know, it's like the difference between ADD with a boy and a girl. At Ann Arbor, Michigan, there's a wonderful Christian lady and a counselor named Sari Solden who wrote the book Women with ADD. And she says, here's the difference. Here's like in the classroom, you know, your classic, you know, little Billy, HD, ADHD, you know, he's getting up for the umpteenth time to sharpen his pencil, you know, and because, for God's sake, I mean, you can sit there for too long, you break the lead so you can get up and go over here, and you go to the potty once in a while, and that way you get to keep moving. Anyway, you know, we're hands-on body kinesthetic, and he's going by, and he sees this guy's new Michael Jordan notebook, and he grabs it, he touches it, you know, touchy, and next thing you know, there's a fur fight and a battle, and the teacher's dragging Billy to the principal's office. Finally, she comes back, she sits down, goes, oh, all right, let me see. Sally, what's the answer to number 7? And she goes, well, I'm on number 2. She didn't even know the fight was going on. She was looking out the window at the bird on the limb, saying, I wonder where he spent the winter. I wonder if he has a family. And the fact is, because she's ADD, she's probably the most intelligent girl in that classroom. But the teacher's going to say, I wouldn't want a bunch of Billies, but I can handle Sally. She's slow. She's a little stupid. But, you know, the fact is she's not. And she's going to take that label, and she's going to end up having a degree, but she's going to be typing papers for somebody else. And she's always going to choose what is safe, not what she could. And she's going to feel overwhelmed like she's drowning and need that alone time and isolation to recover. And she's going to spend her whole life trying to put back all the mess that everybody else in her life creates until she becomes a moral umpire, calling balls and strikes on everybody in her family. And her husband grows more distant, and they don't communicate, and he has an affair, and the children get rebellious and unruly. And I see it every day. Would you read the common symptoms to us?
I'm Dan. Thank you, Jerry. Common symptoms. We are easily distracted and have difficulty paying attention. We have a tendency to tune out or drift away. We are impulsive and make hasty decisions without considering the consequences. We are restless, often hyperactive, and full of nervous energy. We have a strong sense of underachievement and always feel that we fail to live up to our potential. We have difficulty in relationships. We are procrastinators and have trouble getting started or feeling motivated. We cannot tolerate boredom and are always looking for something to do. We have difficulty getting organized. We are impatient and have a low tolerance for frustration. We have mood swings with periods of anxiety, depression, or loneliness. We worry excessively and often have a sense of impending doom. We have trouble going through established channels or following proper procedure. We have many projects going simultaneously and have trouble following through with a project or a task. We are poor observers of ourselves and are often unaware of our effect on others. We tend to say what comes to mind without considering the timing or appropriateness of the remark. We have a tendency toward addictive behavior and use mood-altering substances to medicate ourselves. We have difficulty in the workplace. We either change jobs frequently or have trouble getting along with our coworkers. Finally, we have a family history of ADD or other disorders of impulse control or mood.
They found David E. Cummings, who's the director of medical genetics at the City of Hope National Hospital in Duarte, did a great deal of genetic studies, and Dr. Ken Blum, David Miller, wrote the book Overload, ADD and the Addictive Brain, really found that genetic alcoholics are genetic ADD. As a matter of fact, I teach doctors and therapists and others how to diagnose ADD, and if you don't have alcoholism or addicts or fanatics in your family, then you don't probably have ADD. As a matter of fact, and if you don't have the positive symptoms, so the intelligence, the intuitiveness, the creativity, that giftedness, that sensitivity, then you don't have ADD. Sometimes I'll have people and they'll say, well, I don't relate to the positive stuff, and I'll look closely and I'll see a scar on their front, in their front lobe, in their forehead, and realize, yeah, that's why. It's like Phineas Gage. It's in your psychology books and medical books. The farmer who, had a crowbar go through his eye and out the top of his head. and he lived. I mean, he did well. And then they tested him. He was a great guinea pig. You know, now what happens if somebody doesn't have a front lobe? And so they did all this testing. And it's the front lobe. At first they said, we don't know what the difference is. I mean, this guy's got everything. I mean, he's got his memory. He knows everybody. He has the same intelligence. Exactly the same guy. He's the same guy. And his wife goes, like heck. Now he parks the tractor wherever he wants. He can't plan worth beans, you know, and he's drinking and he's cussing, Doc. And you see, and they found that in the front part of our lobe is where, among all the creatures God made, we have the ability to wait. It's what they call in psychology the behavioral inhibition system. It's part of that brain that puts a lock on the sensory motor strip, kind of on the top part of your brain. And so it locks it down because we've got these basic urges. And if the behavioral inhibition system isn't working, then those urges just go. And so the first of the urges that the behavioral inhibition system locks down is what they call the prepotent response, or urge to respond immediately to your environment. You know, like if the frog, a fly comes in front of the frog, you know, he didn't think about that. Now, it wasn't a reflex like this, an autonomic nervous system. It was just, it's a prepotent. Prepotent means pre, before. Potent means powerful. In other words, spring-loaded. It's like, if you run from a dog, guess what the dog will do? He'll chase you. You put a string in front of a cat, what will a cat do? You take Billy's donut, what will he do? You know, he'll, you know, or what will he say, or who knows what, you know, prepotent. So without behavioral inhibition system, you just respond, the immediate response to get the reward in your environment, say, do whatever. The second urge that the behavioral inhibition system retards or puts a lock on is the urge to escape. You know? It's like when something is unpleasant. That's why I can't go to church unless I'm the preacher. I gotta sit in the corner, I mean the aisle back where, you know, Hartley is there. or the far back. Or also because I got 30% of us have Tourette's of ADD. That means like this. We're going, or little kids blink their eyes, bite their lips, kids that wet the bed longer, you know, clearing his throat, stiffen, or probably one of the most common among children is mimicking. You know, go to bed. It's hallelalia, echolalia, my brother had that, or just Robin Williams, there you go. You know, That's the truth. He went on Oprah and said, I have ADD. And everybody laughed. Yeah, well, we knew that. Huh? Then he said, and I have Tourette. And then it was stone cold silent. And then he went, woof, woof, woof. I think Tourette's is great. I think my kid, my son, I mean, he is Robin Williams, but he's that way everywhere, you know. But he picks up a line from a cartoon or a show and watch out. He's 14. He watched South Park, this stupid cartoon thing. Here we are in the grocery store. Don't touch me there. Mommy says, don't touch me there. You know, shut up. Will you shut up? You know, that's the man who touched me, Mommy. And he's got about 100 different voices. You know, what's that?
Well, that's where the monkey bit me.
You know, that's not what you told me. You know, it's going back and forth. It's fun. Never dull with somebody like that. But
the urge to escape.
And so the ADD guy is the guy that's always at your desk. Why don't you go back to your desk, you know? Because he's bored at his desk. Like, what you doing? How's it? You know, he's like, just go back to your desk and work. But he's escaping all the time, and we do it, whether it's in the church or whatever. Behavioral inhibition system locks it down so you don't escape. But then the third urge that we have is the urge to begin an activity or something and continue to do it. So it's like, but the behavioral inhibition system provides something called a sensitivity to error. So if you're doing something, obviously you got green light, normal person now, green light, red light, and they stop. ADD person, it's green light, red light, red light, red light, they just keep right on going. You know, the party's over, the host is getting in his pajamas, he's putting the cat out, and you're still there. You know, it's like you never got the hints, you never, you just continue on. It's like, you know, at 5:30, my son calls me on the phone and says, Dad, are you coming home tonight? Don't forget the, yeah. You know, I say, oh, yeah, absolutely. I'll be there, man. And all of a sudden, then it's 7:30, and I missed it again. Or, it doesn't matter, but we just get to, you know, for years, I didn't realize people ate lunch. You know, because I get started in something, and I don't take a lunch. I'll just go straight on through, because I can't stop. Or we get into something and we just compulsive, just keep moving on, you know. That's sensitivity there. The fourth urge to which the behavioral inhibition system locks. By the way, this is all in a book by a man named Russell Barkley, Dr. Barkley from the University of Massachusetts, ADHD, The Nature of Self-Control. And you can also look up a paper he did on this at Scientific American website. But it's in this understanding ADD. I just want to remind you of this, please. That when we are doing what we love to do, there is no ADD. When my son is doing what he loves to do, he has no problems with attention. Walt Disney said, do what you love and you'll never work a day in your life. If you're ADD, if you don't do what you love, you never will work a day in your life. The fourth urge that the behavioral inhibition system locks down and retards is an urge to scan our environment constantly. You know, in California where I live, we get these beautiful little black birds that got a gray belly, and they're called gnat catchers. They're little like sparrows, but they catch bugs in the air and these nasty spiders that build webs all over you from Southern California, you know. And it's like, when I walk the dog, we see the gnat catchers, and I say, just, we're not going to get you, man. We're going to walk by you here, but, you know, don't want him to fly away because we're not going to bother him. We're just going by, but it doesn't matter. I get close enough and he's looking all over and boy, he flies away. Because that's naturally for protection. But as human beings, only chimpanzees and porpoises, or dolphins rather, have the ability to wait like that and to lock that down. And not as developed as ours that God gave us. But for ADD, if the behavioral inhibition system isn't working, you're going to scan your environment all the time. And everything that comes in as a number one priority. And we live in a state of perpetual overwhelm if that's not working. And so whereas other people can leave things be, we get overwhelmed. Everything's coming in as a number one, and it is painful, if you understand. In the book Overload, ADD and the Addictive Brain by Ken Blum, he talks about the fly on the wall while he's trying to sleep at night, and there's a bzz, 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 and he can't go to sleep. It's our people from our families that go, can't you shut the kids up? But why do we even bring the kids over to grandma's? Because she's just so angry. She's always got to shut them up. Can't you shut them up? Kids are kids. They're supposed to be like that, you know. And so we, especially as parents, we're the ones with the one are most overwhelmed, and we've got the wildest kids, and it's so hard. And so we deal with that scanning the environment constantly. But behavioral inhibition locks that down so you can protect concentration and think. And as humans, we're able to say, now I'm in a safe place. Ain't nobody going to get me here. I can sit down and think now. Except we can't. We're hearing everything. Here I am at the computer typing, you know, because I'm a writer and I got to get this project in. And I'm going at this... And last time I put in a new card or did something to my computer, I didn't put the screws, all the screws in, you know. And there's a screw hanging out, like just half in there. And I'm trying to do this, and it keeps calling to me, you know. And I'm going, oh! Finally, that's it. I'm going to get up. I'm going to go to the garage. I'm going to get a screwdriver, and I'm going to fix this thing. So I go on down the stairs, past, you know, and I pass the kitchen. And I go, I was going to get iced tea before. And I go to the refrigerator. I open it up, and my son, Tim, put the iced tea thing in back empty, you know. And I pull it. Next thing, I'm washing dishes. I'm sorting my wife's spices. I'm going through the coupons, you know. And it's like, stop it. Go back. I go back up to the computer. I sit down and say, I'm going to get to work. And there's that screw, you know. And it is torturous, you see. And because of that pain, we ADDers have learned to compensate in four ways. And one of the ways that we've learned to compensate, by the way, would somebody be responsible to keep me under? You
remember executive functions?
Executive, think of an executive, yeah. Don't let me forget that. When I say, where am I? Would you... now I just had a brain fart and lost the other thing. Oh, I know. What? Yeah. Oh, hallelujah. By the way, anything I say, in my opinion, I'm just telling you what the doctors are saying. This comes from Dr. Robert Hunt, medical doctor, director of clinical studies at Vanderbilt University in Nashville. Wonderful man. Wrote the book, The Child with the Wiggly Mind. He's blessed, man. I mean, thank God for him. But Dr. Hunt talks about the neurological subtypes of ADD. And the thing about this is that to deal with that overwhelm, we as ADDers have learned that the way to wake up our brain, because if we're stuck as round pegs in a square hole, we have got to adapt. And so, but if we're in a round, then our brains are turned off. And it's not working for us. If we did what we loved, we wouldn't have a problem with that. But we're not. And so we're stuck, and mama's pushing us to go to school and all the things that we have to do. And so our brains are turned off. But we learned early on that a neural stimulant, you know, Ritalin, caffeine, the worst of all is adrenaline, will wake it up. And so we wake up in the morning, get the worry of the day. Once we pump that old adrenal gland, you know, got that the rent check that's due, that person don't like us, that stupid thing we said yesterday, that terrible thing we got to do tomorrow, we frighten ourselves, we get the adrenaline going, we wake up the front lobe, and you can see this on brain scans, spec scans, where they give you a little Kool-Aid with a radioisotope in it and take a picture of your brain. And they see, you know, your front lobe is washed out. And you just can't do it. And as a matter of fact, the more pressure you're under as an ADDer, the more that front lobe washes out. Do you know that you can fail a sobriety test when you're clean sober if you're ADD? Because of the fine motor problems that you lose when your front lobe's not turned on, and when that cop makes you more intimidated, you would actually pass the test if you had two drinks. That's the truth. But, because I'm going to have to remind you, let me come back to this other one. Remember where I'm at right now, okay. Dr. Ken Blum and David Miller, who wrote the book Overload, I'm referring to them a lot, but really I don't rely on them that much, but he discovered the alcoholic genes about 13, 14 years ago. And then he began to realize that all of us alcoholics were going back to our doctors and saying, Doc, now that I'm sober, I'm antsy, I'm not doing so good, I'm a little on edge. And all the doctors were trained to say, you have what we call post-sobriety syndrome. You were such a stupid idiot and drank for so many years that you ruined all the brain cells in your head, and now this is what you're going to live with, you stupid idiot. And then there were the people that became my age, like Vietnam veteran types. We came back and said, hey, Doc, no. I was this way before I started drinking. As a matter of fact, I started drinking because I was like this. And Blum goes, oh my God, you know, that's right. Because he was a recovering alcoholic and really into nutrition and amino acids and some of the good stuff that helps. And so he did this study and found out the alcoholic brain, which is genetic ADD or addict, I mean, we're 5% of the population that are genetically predisposed to ADD and alcoholism and Tourette's and dyslexia and all the other sorts of things that go with that. And we're the only ones with it. And when they look at ours, we have a lower level of the natural morphine, feel-good juice everybody else has got in their brain. So they call us dysthemic, which is a fancy way. Dys in Greek is a prefix that means bad or unlucky. Don't diss my mama. That's truth, you know, and thymic refers to the thymus gland, which is below your thyroid, long thought by the ancients to be the seat of humor. In fact, it's where we get T cells and immune system. They didn't know, though. So it means bad humor is what it classically means. That's who we are. We're the grumpy ones, you know, and I see the convertible driving down the street. The top is down. They're all smiling, bugs in their teeth, you know. And it's like, why didn't I get that? I could be in the car and I wouldn't be happy. I go to Disneyland, the happiest place on earth, and I'm not happy. I get a vacation and a day off. But then they found that when they introduce a little bit of alcohol in our system, that natural morphine level, those reward pathways in the limbic system, open up to normal. Whoa. So if 2 drinks makes me feel normal, 22 ought to make me feel great. You know? So when I used to leave work, I'd go to the liquor store a mile from my house, get a 6-pack, drink 2 right in the car, you know, and throw away the cans, no open containers, and then I'd drive that other way, and suddenly I could feel good about myself. All day long, they'd say, hey, Jerry, that's a nice outfit. Or, hey, did a good job today. Thanks for the other thing. And I could hear it, but I couldn't feel it. There was nothing good about me, you see. I couldn't get the reward pathways. And that just was, and then suddenly I could feel good. Problem with alcohol and nicotine, it does open up those. But then it begins to, after too many, it begins to stimulate the production of neuroinhibitors, which literally put a cap on the very receptors that you need to make the dopamine work. Because our problem with ADD is when we're not doing what we love, we have ineffective neurotransmissions. And our brain is misfiring. It's like the dopamine is the WD-40 of your brain. And that's what we've got to have to work. By the way, when your brain doesn't think it has enough dopamine, it calls for more. Just like your body can call for more insulin, your body makes cholesterol. You know that? That's why they don't put people on no-fat diets anymore, because their body was thinking, we need more cholesterol, and started to create it, and so they had to do low-fat. Your body can create all sorts of things. Your body says, more dopamine. You don't need more dopamine. You need to effectively use what you have. The problem is, you're calling for more, and then it goes to the sensory motor strip, not where you need it. You got tics, you got motor movement. It goes to the temporal lobe, and it's angry outburst, you know. Or then we're angry all the time. Or it goes to the basal ganglia, which is part of that behavioral inhibition system when we just can't wait. It goes to the cingulate, part of your brain that teaches, it helps you learn. It's repeating things, you know, so that when you go and meet somebody, Joe Schmo from Kokomo, part of your brain goes, Joe Schmo from Kokomo, Joe Schmo from Kokomo, Joe, and it's down, 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 deeper into your brain, you know, except if, and so that you understand it, remember it. But if this is happening and the dopamine goes there, next thing you know, you're washing your hands 10 times, 100 times. You're checking the door 20 times. You get into compulsive loops all the time. If it goes to your limbic system, you've got raging PMS, you know, as women. And life is terrible for us. And you get these tons of moods because it's all going to the wrong parts of our brain. And then you go to doctors and they'll say, oh, you've got bipolar. Here's lithium that caps the very worst part that needs to be working. Or they'll say, no, you're problem is, you know, you need serotonin uptake inhibitors, you need Prozac, and a little bit of a stimulant, which you already know, would turn it all on. And they begin to work again. But you know that. You've already been doing it. You get the worry of the day. And the cloud of doom follows you everywhere you go. So the first subtype is dealing with that overwhelm, is the hyperactive. And he deals with this thing, you know, that he goes halfway down the block to see whose dog's barking, you know? And then he comes back and he butts into the conversation in the next room. But he's not listening to you. The whole time you're talking, he's looking over here, he's doing that, he's picking his nose, he's doing anything but being here. And he's busy, and he's not doing any of it well. He gets to the end of the day and goes, well, I was busy today, you know? And it's like, but I didn't do anything. You know, I didn't get anything accomplished. And then the second subtype, how do they deal with the overload? They don't go chase them all down. But they deal with what Dr. Hunt calls, I don't like his term, he calls this one dysthymic, you know. Oh, I call it just overwhelmed. And she deals with the overwhelm by creating a defensive posture. You know, she'll isolate herself in the bedroom. She'll put Constantina wire and landmines around the house. And, you know, and Billy comes home and says, well, Eddie's mom's taking him to the school thing. And she's going, oh, she feels like she's drowning, can barely keep her head above water. I haven't even done the thank you cards. And I've got to get the thing ready. And I've got to, and it's much harder for women because the cultural obligations that you've got. Who takes the kid to the doctor? Who goes to the school things? Who has to help him with the homework? Who's got to get dinner? Who's doing laundry? Who's, you know, and you may be working a job like the old man, you see. And so it's harder for you. And women with ADD begin to make the world concentrically smaller and smaller and defend themselves and cut out obligations. And I'm not a very good friend. I can't write back. I don't call back. And you feel worse and worse about yourself. And you always have a spear, a little weapon, you know. We've already had sex this month, you know. And you can keep them at bay for a while. But one day you don't have a life. Because the husband can't sleep in the bedroom anymore because you need more space and more privacy, and it's tough. And the third subtype of ADD, according to Dr. Robert Hunt, is inattentive. And this guy's easy to tell because he got chili and mustard down the front of his shirt. Because how's he deal with the overwhelm and the overload? By not dealing with it. He bit into that chili dog and didn't even see it go down. You know, and he doesn't know that he's standing too close, talking too loud, staying too long, you know. He doesn't even know he's spilling coffee on your carpet while he's talking, you know. He looks like he just got up and came straight to school or to work, you know. Couldn't spell the word fashion if you held a gun to his head. He just that inattentive. He deals with it by not dealing with it. The last one is the hardest of all because this guy doesn't have ADD and you can't tell it. His socks match his tie because he's learned not only to get the worry of the day. Well, all ADDers hyper-focus at times. Like a laser beam, somehow we can have attention. All of a sudden I get into my office and I just file all of those mountains and stacks. I put away the mail. I got the books. I even dust the bookshelves. I mean, and I'm going, where did this come from? How did this happen? How is it that I'm like this today? I'd love to bottle it and keep it for later, you know. But I can't. It's gone. And then that's hyper-focus. But the oppositional guy, or what's called the hyper-focused, which is the fourth subtype. He doesn't wait. He knows how to hyper-focus. He doesn't wake up in the morning and get the worry of the day. He wakes up and gets the war of the day. And you know him. Well, what new soapbox is Bill on today? What battle is he fighting now? What's he selling today? He's a jerk. You don't want to be married to a guy like that because there isn't an awful lot of hope. You know, he knows everything. He's the expert. Don't you dare get him off of his war of the day and onto you, because he knows how to fix you. He knows what your problem is. My dad was like that. I had to sit for 3 hours one night because I wouldn't eat my tomatoes till I just, you know, chewed them and spit them down my shirt. Thank God he never looked to see the red belly I had. You know, can you imagine an oppositional man married to an overwhelmed woman? You know, she gets sick. Fibromyalgia, rheumatoid arthritis, irritated bowel syndrome, asthma and migraines, all the autoimmune diseases that we get. You see, and it's like, she'll die. Or can you imagine that guy married to an inattentive woman? I told you to have this place cleaned up when I got home. You know, and the laundry's up to the top of the washing machine. You got to wash a dish to eat off of it. You know, and you can predict how the family is going to be. There's all sorts of other things related to ADD, and I'm not going to go into, because I'm going to end this thing with hope. I got to tell you why hope is so important. My church is called Spirit of Hope. And one of the reasons for that is, you know, Cornell University did a study, and they took a vat of water and a little bit of air and space, and they put a bunch of rats in this vat, and then they closed the lid over the rats, and all of the rats were dead and went to the bottom within 6 minutes. And then they took an identical vat, identical space, put same amount of rats in, except this time they didn't close the lid all the way. And those rats were still swimming after 36 hours. And they, so the researchers picked them out and, you know, put them in another experiment probably, but. But the fact is, if you don't give somebody daylight, you've heard it said, where there's life, there's hope. I'm here to tell you, baloney. You know, where there's hope, there's life. First year that I did ADD support group, so we had 3 suicide attempts. You know, 2 were successful. And the third one that wasn't, the guy lived, when they found his body in the room, after 3 days, they didn't know where he was. And went in, he had the 12 steps for ADD, the book that I helped write for this publishing company, on his chest. And he told them that he said, when I get better, I want to go back. And I do this all the time with youth. 40% of all untreated hyperactive boys will commit a felony by the age of 16. 37% of all ADDers, hypoactive, hyperactive boy, girl, will not finish high school. 50% of all ADDers, youth and adults, abuse a substance. You know, 70% of the men in prison were either hyperactive as youth, diagnosed ADD, or related learning disabilities. An area around Ann Arbor, Michigan, the court, when a juvenile comes in, the courts have begun just in that area. Instead of just sending the kid to prison, they have them tested for learning disabilities. And if they've got ADD or related learning disabilities, they mandate treatment, and they're emptying out their prisons. Paul Wellstone, senator from Minnesota, saw that and tried to add that into that youth crime bill. No. He wouldn't do it. Let's build more prisons. That's far more popular. You know it costs from $35,000 to $150,000 a year to keep a guy in jail, in prison, all according to what jail they're going to? Let me tell you about this ADD kid. Let me tell you why Herod wants him. Of those intelligence we talked about, we don't do well in the top 2 intelligences. This is good stuff. You know, the linear math, verbal linguistic. I do good in algebra, but when it gets linear, I fail. But I can love those things. But the whole school system is only built on the top 2. This is from Howard Gardner, Dr. Howard Gardner, Harvard University, the man who wrote the book on human intelligence, Frames of Mind, and many others. He's a brilliant man. Teachers all over America know Howard Gardner and intelligence. And he yet says, I hear him talk and know him personally, and have had him on the radio locally in Southern California with Rich Bueller, and God willing, I'm going to have him to Southern California to teach teachers. He says, why don't you teachers teach beyond just the top 2 intelligences? Why don't you use these other 5? The fact is, we don't live there for ADD. We excel in the bottom 5 intelligences. And do you know the average ADDer can have an intelligence as high as 30 points above the rest of humanity? You know who did that study? The Vacaville study. Prisons. And they replicated that in Colorado. A friend of mine, Dr. Dwayne McCallan, who's an assistant chief of medicine for all of Colorado State Corrections. And they did it perfectly. And said, yes, these guys are intelligent. They used to use it against them. Say, see, the criminals are smarter than we are. But the fact is, they're ADD. You know, the ones that are in there. And so, in these intelligences, stop and think about this for a minute. In ADD, the spectrum, there's the hypoactives that tend to have weight problems and et cetera, and the daydreamers, the space cadets, you know, Earth to Sally, you know, that kind of thing. Then we get a little further to hyperactive, then we get to Tourette's, then we go to autism. That's us. I got an autistic nephew. You see, the first level of autism is what? It's the techno nerds, Bill Gates. You know, brilliant. These are the guys with all the pins in their pockets and all the, and yet they don't have any social skills. Gates has that social coach. Say, thank you now, Bill. Thank you. and I got a friend who it works at Autographics and Pomona, the typesetter. And when I do work for National Publishing in Philadelphia, I am the liaison for National Publishing to Autographics. And there's this guy there, and he's one of these techno nerds. And he will never look me in the eyes, but he's brilliant. And publishing is an intricate thing. And sometimes the publisher will say, well, Jerry, what if we change the font or widen the margins or went from this many page signatures to this many? And I'll say this to the guy, and all of a sudden he'll go, well, that would change it to XYZ, blah, 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 blah. How could he do that? And he's always right. Right there in his head. But you go to his house, there's no sofa. There's no wife. There's an empty refrigerator. You see, and yet he functions well in this technical world. Then you go to the next level of autism, and it's like what CBS did on TV. You've seen it with the musical guy. That elderly couple came to the orphanage and said, "We want him." You don't want him. He don't talk. He sits in the corner. We want him. They brought the little boy home, 5 years old, sits in his bedroom for 2 weeks. Nothing. Finally, they said, "Well, we're going to move furniture around." They moved, put a piano in his room. Middle of the night, several days later, they said, "Did you turn off TV, honey?" Yeah. "Radio on?" "No." "Get up." And this kid is playing with both hands the most beautiful music they'd ever heard. And whatever he heard, he could play. And then Maury Schaefer did a follow-up on it not long later. And he played this little microcassette of some obscure Polish composer on TV. And you can see it still on their website. And the kid played it young, in his 20s, played it perfectly. And the doctor said, if you would have played 3 minutes, he would have played it perfectly. If you would have played it 30 minutes, he would have replayed it perfectly. Maury Schaefer says, "Where does that intelligence come from?" And the doctor said, "We don't know." Albert Einstein was ADD. Lousy in math. You know, sprechen Sie Deutsch, and language. He couldn't do language or math when he was in grammar school. Rejected from the colleges. He couldn't even go to Zurich Polytechnic, that later wanted him as a professor. Thomas Edison was ADD. You know, Mozart, all of these guys. You know, it's intelligence. And would you remind me to go back to Thomas Edison or Albert Einstein? Let's finish these bottom five intelligences quick. First of the top five, I'm not ADD. Don't touch me there. Mommy says... Okay, the first one is hands-on body kinesthetic, touchy-feely. That doesn't mean that we're... That means that we learn with hands-on. So here we are. Don't tell me how to work this program. I can figure it out. Who cares if I delete a few files, you know? Well, maybe we were supposed to have a few extra nuts and bolts, you know? And it's like, but don't give me the instructions. Don't tell me how to get there. Say, "Are you coming to the party, Jerry?" Yeah, I'm coming to the party. Well, first you go down Main Street. Say, "No, just give me the address, please. Give me..." "No, first you go down. It's real easy." You know, I'm going, just tell me the address. You know, I don't want to go through. I'll figure it out on my way, you know? Hands-on learning. The second one is visual spatial. We see our thoughts. We visualize our thoughts. Other people don't do that. And we see what we're saying. And where color goes straight to the brain. And that we're visual and spatial. And women especially, ADD women especially, have an incredible ability to remember places where things are, where, you know, except their glasses. They, you know, that store, I know exactly where the store was. We'll go exactly there. They know. And then the third human intelligence at which we excel, I mean, far beyond the rest of mankind, is musical rhythmic. It does not mean that we're all Mozart, but if you know Mozart, you know he was ADD, sexual addictions and alcoholism, but incredible giftedness. But it means we hear the rhythm of life. When I was a kid, I couldn't memorize the Bible verses in catechism. I just couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. Until my mama put them to cadence. You know, like the Marines, "If your CC is up, let me hear your life." And suddenly I'm memorizing anything, you know. To this day, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, you know, 30 days has September, April, June, and November. I can memorize anything. And my daughter went to a Lutheran school, and so she couldn't do the Bible verses. So I taught her cadence, and we memorized them when we left the house, and 10 minutes later by the thing, and she remembers them to this day. Perfectly. I do too. As the lightning comes from the east, even to the west, so she'll come from the south. You know, like, I just know it because of the cadence, because of it, a musical intelligence. They don't do that for your kid at school. And then the fourth of the human intelligences at which we excel is interpersonal. We learn best within the dynamics of the group. And so here I am at the coffee shop. I'm thinking out loud, you know, talking. And I'm saying to myself, "Jerry, that's brilliant. Did you hear what you just said? Where's my memo recorder?" You know. And sometimes I had to go preach my sermon to somebody else before I could write it down and make sense of the thing. Interpersonal intelligence. And the last human intelligence at which we excel is intrapersonal. That's metacognition and intuitiveness. Metacognition is just a fancy Greek way to say meta means like in the way, literally. And cognition is thinking, so we learn in the way. So here I am at the house, the guy's coming over putting the doohickey on the whatchamajigget, you know, and I'm going, "You know, if I hung around you for a few days, I could figure out how to do that job." And he's going, "Oh no, I was in school 8 months to learn how to do this." And the poor guy probably was. But I could pick it up in a few days. I really could. Maybe do the job better than he did it, because that's how I learn. Metacognition, in the way. That's how we used to learn. You know, apprentices with masters, fathers with sons. Our names were carpenter, miller, shoemaker, baker. My name, Seiden, in German was Seidenschnur, which means silken cord. Go figure. I don't know what we did. But then, yes, oh, good. And, hang on to that, though. But there's a second half of that, which metacognition and intuitiveness. Intuitiveness is that we have this sense of knowing. The reason why the metacognition is we're always putting the big picture together. We're always visualizing that big picture. So it's like when this guy's talking to us, you know, after church when we need to go home, you know, he's going, we're thinking, now where's the guy going with this? Where's it? You know, we're thinking about where he's going with it, you know, and we've already figured the end out. And so when, now, God bless Toastmasters. I love Toastmasters. I enjoyed that. Some of my best mornings were spent with Toastmasters. But, you know, they say, tell them what you're going to tell them. Tell them, and then tell them what you told them, or whatever. And that's okay for 95% of the world, but for us, we're going, we already know, and it's over with. You know, ADDers, I don't finish my sentence, and then I go three sentences ahead to where my brain is gone, then to 95% of the world, there aren't ADDers going, oh, excuse me, you lost me there, son. You know, and I'm going, but ADD people keep right up with me, because they fill in the blanks, they're putting the whole, they're intuitive, and when I get ADD people alone, they say, alone, there's one who publicly talks about this, Jan Johnson in northern Indiana, who is an official with this public school district. She supervises the 504 programs and stuff. But when I get ADDers alone, they say, sometimes I know when the phone's going to ring or who it's going to be or somebody. Haven't thought of a guy in 20 years. I'm thinking of him. And the next day, guess what? I get a letter from him. He calls. I run into him at Kmart, you know. And it's like, my daughter, before she was diagnosed ADD, she came to me one day and said, Dad, what's up with me? I got up in the morning and I didn't want to go to school. I was thinking, oh, Mr. Hanley or Manley's class, and he's a coach that shouldn't be teaching history, and just, I didn't want to go to school. And she said I was going to, like, play sick and chew the soda crackers and ketchup and put in the toilet like you told me. and let Mama think I need, you know, mental health day is what I call those. It works. Oh, honey. Oh. And so, see, I was going to do that, but then something in me said, you have a substitute today. And I went to school. And I went to the classroom, looked in the little window, and there was some fat old lady. I didn't know, Dad. And I was like, how did I know that? And it was like, tell you, it's almost like this. That intuitiveness. Well, Carl Jung called it precognition and was the only real psychiatrist who ever had any spirituality about the thing. Freud just called it spooky. But let me tell you, there's a guy named Tom Hartman who wrote the book ADD, A Different Perspective, and he said, and this is, he's a sociologist, he said, now isn't it interesting? 95% of the world are farmer, whether it's New Guinea or New Jersey, are farmer-gatherers. Linear, here's a berry, there's a berry. Here's a berry, there's a berry. Here's a row, there's a row. I mean, they could screw tridgets on whatchamajiggies on a factory line all day long. It would drive me crazy. That's why mill men kill everybody, you know? It's like, you know, I couldn't stand that. And yet they can do it all day long. 95% of the world can do that. He said, but isn't it interesting that 5% of the world are hunters and pioneers? They're the risk takers. You know, they're hypersensitive. Is that bush rattling because it's a rabbit or a rattlesnake? They're visual. They're hands-on. They're curious. They got to go over the ridge to see what's on the other side. And they're warm-hearted. They're bringing the meat back to the 95%. And as you begin to think about it, you realize, you know, it's a fact. In the world today where there is no Western civilization influence, there is no ADD. Now, there is 5% who are different, but they're the heroes and the holy men. They're the pioneers and the leaders. But when Western civilization comes along, and all of a sudden the age of reason, industrial revolution, and everybody's butt now is in a seat in rows. You've got the little wiggly Walt Disney in the back who's told he's an idiot because he doesn't like math and English, so he doodles all day. Instead of learning metacognition, how we do, fathers and sons, we've got to listen to a boring teacher. I can't tell you what went on in English in Neponset High School, north of Peoria, but I could tell you what it looked like out the window. You know, because that's where I was. And that's where I lived, in my head out there. I'd win the lottery, or I'd become a millionaire, or anything but be there. And Thomas Edison, his mother, he said, the teacher says I'm stupid, I'm retarded, I can't learn. The teacher goes to school, public school, and says, you tell me to my face, mister. The teacher says, he's dull-witted. We could have him here, it'd be a favor, but he's not going to learn anything. This is on a website from a school in South Dakota called Thomas Edison. And the story, among others. And she said, all right, thank you, sir. She grabs Thomas, and she goes home. And she took Thomas home, and she looked at him and said, Thomas, there's only one rule in my school. You don't have to learn anything you don't want to. And then she went into her bedroom, and she looked at herself in the mirror on her vanity, and she said, and honey, here's your homework. Make him love the rest. She began to read to him the great stories of American literature and of English literature. And he crawled from over her shoulder into his under her lap and learned how to read faster than they were. Then he began to devour science books, turn their basement into a laboratory, still the most prolific patent holder in American history. But he was stupid. He was retarded. Albert Einstein, you've got to get this. You've got a public television station somewhere that has a store. Look for the Nova episode on Einstein called Redefining Einstein by Nova, the Nova series. And they talk about Albert Einstein and his theory of relativity. And here and they actually take a movie reel. Remember the old black and white movie tone or movie reels they'd show at the theater? They didn't have TV. And so black and white, here they are in the 30s looking at Albert Einstein. And there's this anomaly that's happening in space with a certain alignment of the stars. And at the same time, an absolute, a total eclipse of the sun. So they've got to, if Albert Einstein is right, that time is bent by gravity. My God, think about that. And light and time are bent by gravity. Then at this perfect time in this alignment, if he's right, when we look at the stars, they will be displaced and not where we think they should be because of this anomaly. This is actually on this film, what public TV did, Redefining Albert Einstein. And the whole world is listening on the radios. Everybody's holding their breath. That, you know, what's going to happen here? And all these heady scientists are all over there. And they put the microphone in all their faces. What do you think? This guy's an idiot. What are we doing here? Why are we publicizing a fool like this? And right to a man, everybody says, this is a joke. This can't be. This is stupid. I mean, on public TV, you'll see this. And finally, they get to the headiest and the biggest, and he says, yeah, absolutely not. Can't, you know, it just, and suddenly then this thing happens. The whole world is holding their breath, and they look up through their telescopes, and they cannot find their stars. And they drop their heads and walk away, except for the one guy who is the most belligerent, who was the most important guy. They said, well, what do you think now, old Einstein? The man moved close to the microphone, and he said, he thinks the thoughts of God. What if God took a bunch of us and made us very sensitive and made us very gifted to sing and to preach and to write and to do art and to be Michelangelo, who's still printing, still painting at 95 years old, the Sistine Chapel. It gave us this incredible ability, so sensitive, but we're only 5%, maybe 10% because the other 5 don't know it, you know. And here we are. You see, they always want to kill the baby. Herod wants you. Pharaoh wants to get the Moseses. We better throw him in the Nile. They put Joseph with the multicolored robe in the pit. You see, the thing is, of all the people, and we're the ones they're knocking down, you see, and we're not able to express that those gifts that God's given us. And they put us as round pegs in the square holes, and then we are not motivated. Thomas Edison's mama had it right. She helped him understand, you know, because when my son's doing what he loves to do, there's no problem with attention. He has no problems. And that's why I tell parents, you teach your kids. You learn from your kids. Let them teach you who they are. Look at a beehive. Here's a beehive, and there's little nurse bees in the middle of that beehive, and they do nothing but tend those eggs and fan the wax if it gets too hot. And then there's scout bees who go out, look for the pollen sources, and leave a trail. A scent trail. Harvester bees, just get the pollen and bring it back. Manufacturer bees that chew up the pollen and spit out honey. One day, though, they come to a nurse bee and says, honey, one of our scouts didn't make it back last night. We need you to, like, fill in. She goes, ah!
And she gets out, she goes 3 feet from the hive, and she goes,
you know, that wasn't what she was made to do. The Bible says, train up a child in the way he should go, the way he's bent. And when he's old, he won't depart from it. God made us as special and wonderful. And yet, just because 5% of us don't fit, does that mean you got to force it in? And until you've broken us? Until we end up, oh yeah, you know, we used, without, before Western civilization, we were, you know, Prince Charles was diagnosed ADD as a child. That's because his monarchy happened long before Western civilization. You see, and we're the leaders to this day. You know, Bill Clinton, sexual addictions. Think about Richard Nixon, a compulsive liar, and you know, he grew up in Whittier near me, and I know all about him, and klutzy Gerald Ford, motor sequencing problems, you know, and still can't put a sentence together to this day, if you ever watch him. And it's like, all the, you know, the leadership, that's who we are! And yet, this is what happens to us. And so, I'm writing a workbook now for youth, called Round Pegs and Square Holes, Helping ADD Youth Find the Perfect Fit. And a parent mentor's guide goes along with it, called Models, Mentors, and Mamas. And the point is, somebody said, how do you teach a kid with no concept of time management? You don't. You teach him the value of time. I was in a van with Dr. Robert Hunt, and a PhD lady from a learning center in a big university was in the van with us, Dayton, Ohio. And she was singing the praises of medication. I'm not against medication, because you see, if you've already screwed up your brain like that, I would rather you take a little bit of medication than die from the problems related to stress and adrenaline addiction, because you can't fight disease. But she was singing the praises of medication, and he goes, you know, medication, this is a medical doctor. He says, medication's fine, it helps kids focus, but it doesn't tell them what to focus on. For that, they need us. And she starts saying, yes, but we do cognitive redevelopment and yada, 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 and we give them all these structures and all this baloney. And I'm quoting Hunt verbatim here, okay? He goes, you know, I lose my damn date timer every other week. And I get a new one and put in all my names and addresses, and then I get bored with it. He says, but I found that when I come alongside of another life that does it right, fire begets fire, life begets life. And then I learn that. I pick it up because values are caught, not taught. And he said, we need to translate all of those cognitive yada, yada, yadas into values and then impart them through mentors and models and mamas. And he said, because I can have amnesia, be under hypnosis, or otherwise lose my presence of mind, but I will never violate a value. You can't make me do something under hypnosis I would do apart from it. And the fact is, though, that that's tough because that requires models and mentors and adults that work with these kids. You don't reheat the same time management and stuff baloney and give it to them. Take those things, convert them into values, and then we won't ever lose them. It's like this, and models and mentors come on all levels. I'm almost done here. When I was a kid in the 60s, we used to throw trash all over the highways of Illinois. I'm living in California now, but it's just the way it was. You remember? Until we had a national mama come along, Lady Bird Johnson, and say, come on, kids, let's keep America beautiful. And let's, you know, and just told us not to litter and had a picture of an Indian with a tear coming down his face, you know, and she changed the values of a generation. Today, if I'm in the car and somebody throws even a gum wrapper out, I feel this violation down in my gut. Well, you know, I teach my son the value of people, the value of money, the value of time, the value of the environment and of resources. Nobody has to say to him, don't throw the oil in the dumpster. He knows because he's seen me do it. I impart the value. And motivation, we don't have a problem if we're value motivated. There's a story about an Indian chief that came to Manhattan one day with a businessman years ago. And he's walking down the street and the old Indian chief goes, I hear a cricket. Businessman goes, baloney, you don't hear a cricket. No, I hear a cricket. There's buses and cars and horns and people yelling, you don't hear a cricket. I hear a cricket. He goes, all right, show me. Goes across to one hotel that dumps out, you know, on the streets in Manhattan, lifts up a leaf, walks across the traffic, lifts up a little leaf, and there's a cricket. He says, how did you know that cricket was there? And he said, give me what's in your pocket, the chief said. Guy emptied his pocket, gave him all of his change, Indian chief walks out to the sidewalk, throws the change up, tinkles down, and everybody on the sidewalk. He says, because we pay attention to what we value. And you will too. And our kids will too. No one will have to write it on their hands, put post-its around, because it will be who they are. But that makes too much sense. And I had to sell my van to pay rent last month. You know, I had to borrow money to get here, or get a grant just to get a plane ticket here. Because for 6 months I've been trying to do this. I developed Spirit of Hope to write these. I've written 35, well, it's up to 37 or more books for other people. I don't get any of the money, but when I've got things like this to write that are important, Superior Court judges, people in charge of state correctional institutions writing letters of recommendation, and I can't, I lose my medical insurance, you see, because I can't do the things I know are right. And they say, no, Jerry, we'll just build another prison, thank you. And we'll destroy another life. Another kid will commit a felony. Another woman will die from an autoimmune disease. I met Dr. Kavanaugh once, who wrote Magnificent Addiction, medical doctor. I said, what are you doing for your ADD, Jerry? And I was an AA Nazi back then. I said, you're going to go to hell if you take an aspirin. And he talked about the stress. And this gentleman, he put his hand right in his shoulder and said, Jerry, where are the scars? And I don't have an AC joint there. You know, and he said, and who's dying in your family? And my sister Florence had just died of cancer. And my other sister Jenny was fighting cancer. Thank God she's about an 8-year survivor now. But it was like, it is so hard for us. And why do that to our kids? I force them into that product. Never let them enjoy the joy of life and experience what it is. And you see, instead, we develop coping skills, survival skills, child logic, arrested development. We're 40 years old, still living life like 4-year-olds. And our lives are screwed up. Our marriages are hurting. Our careers are in shambles. But there is hope. And I want to pull the lid off of the pot for you today and say, God made you very special. Very special. You are gifted in an intelligence that they don't even understand. Because like the seers of old, time doesn't even affect you if God wants to give you a little intuitiveness, a little wisdom of an Albert Einstein. And we can know things we're not supposed to know because maybe we're supposed to tell the world. And yet, who does the devil want to destroy? Us and our children. If you want to do, I have a nonprofit organization called Spirit of Hope. If you want to give to see a workbook like that developed, I fought it for. Bless you, Jerry. I got a brother with cocaine addiction, another one in jail. Love you, man. Thank you for doing that. Here's my foundation. Walked in, saw the suits. They laughed at me. Said, ha, we don't have the same mission. And I was out the door. Saw another man. Hands on the thing, says, money ain't going to fix this. He says, you're obviously under-medicated. And if I wasn't medicated, I would have thrown you out 15 minutes ago. And that's what I hit time after time after time. But values will change our lives. We give our kids the gift of telling them who they are. Redefine yourself, restructure your environment, and renegotiate your relationships. And you're not going to need medication because you're going to fit. One last story. I called a friend one day who's ADD. This is passion of my life. Called my friend, and I'm going to talk to him, and all of a sudden I hear, hello. It's ADD little boy, you know. I said, is your dad there? Yes. Well, can I talk to him? No. So, well, why not? Is your mother there? Yes. Well, can I talk to her? No. So, well, is there anybody else there? Policeman. Well, can I talk to him? No. I said, well, is there anybody else? Fireman. So, well, could I talk to him? No. I said, well, what are all those people doing? Looking for me. And I'm looking for them because I want to tell them who they are and how they can change their life and how they can grow. I got some books and tapes. And if I don't sell that stuff, I ain't going to pay for the ticket and the hotel room. So, and I've got a couple of volunteers that said they'd help me at my table. So God bless you guys. And keep hope alive, like old Jesse Jackson says.